Greetings, cannabis cultivators worldwide. Jordan River here, back with more GrowCast, broadcasting from the heart of the Great Plains. Today we have fan favorite OK Calyx back on the line. You know him, you love him. Today's episode is awesome. If you haven't heard the older episode with OK Calyx, make sure to scroll back and check that one out. By the way, a lot of our episodes getting archived for members only at growcastpodcast.com/membership. So watch out for that, everybody. Thank you to all the members out there. But OK Calyx is back today to talk about preparing for winter, late harvest, overwintering, cover crops. It's a wide-ranging episode. It's a really cool episode. I know you're going to love it. Before we jump into it with OK Calyx, shout out to SD Microbes. SDMicrobeWorks.com. Code GrowCast for 10% off. BioVast is the best compost that money can buy, folks. We just took a look at this stuff under the microscope, and every sample that used it was absolutely ripping. Now, this is highly formulated, inoculated, manure-free vermicompost, and there's nothing quite like it. You can get your BioVast 10% off with code GrowCast at SDMicrobeWorks.com. Like I said, it's the best compost that money can buy. And you can also find Bokashi and a bunch of other good stuff up there, code GrowCast applying site-wide at SDMicrobeWorks.com. Try yourself some BioVast, make it into some tea or inoculate your system with it, and let me know. I know you're going to love the results. The stuff is absolutely incredible, and we're so happy to have found this partner with this high-quality compost available for cannabis growers like you. So, SDMicrobeWorks.com, code GrowCast for 10% off. Thank you to SD Microbeworks. Try that BioVast out, everybody. All right, let's get into it with OK Calyx. Thank you for listening and enjoy the show. Hello, podcast listeners. You are now listening to GrowCast. I'm your host, Jordan River, and I want to thank you for tuning in today. Before we get started, as always, I urge you, please share this show. Tell a grower, tell a smoker, turn someone on to GrowCast. We're on Spotify. We're everywhere. And check out all the stuff that we're doing at growcastpodcast.com/action. There you'll see the classes and the membership and the seeds and everything going on. Thank you for your support, everybody. I do appreciate you tuning in. Today we have a fan favorite. Quickly became a fan favorite and now is a highly requested guest. OK Calyx is back on the line. What's up, OK Calyx?
Hey, man, what's going on? Jordan, how are you?
I'm doing excellent, man. I've seen some of your posts. It looks like you're doing awesome there out on your property. First, catch us up. What's been going on? What have you been up to? And how is life?
Yeah. Last time we talked, I think we talked about a lot of JDAM stuff, JLS, JMS things. And my garden now is over. It's been fully prepared and winterized. And I'm practicing my JDAM methods on it, which is a base fertilizer and additional fertilizer. But my garden area is finished. My cannabis plants are all almost done. I've got one plant left. It's called a killer breath. It's real gassy and stinky. And it's just been taking a little bit longer, but I've chopped down all the blueberry work that I've done, and it's all getting washed right now.
Nice, man. I want to talk about all of that. I want to talk about some of the new crosses that you've been working on, and we're going to get into some JDAM stuff. But let's start kind of from what you said just a second ago, preparing for winter. You know, a lot of outdoor growers, they have this huge downtime, especially these full season guys. And there's a lot that you should be doing to your garden in between these warm cycles and these runs, right? In that downtime. Do you want to talk about winter crops and what you do to prepare for winter?
Yeah. So when your garden is through and you don't have any more food growing in it, what I do to prepare my garden is this. It's a JDAM method. And there's two things. It's called a base fertilizer and an additional fertilizer. And it's real easy. It's simple stuff. All you're doing, whenever your garden is done, you want to take all of your plants that were growing or that are left in your garden, and you want to cut them up, you know, chop them up into little smaller pieces. They don't have to be small. Just chop your plants up and lay them on the ground. This is considered your base fertilizer. It is going to get organic matter into your garden that it desperately needs after a good growing season. You know, you're reusing all of your material, of course, but you can also bring in other vegetation. Like, you know, I'm a dumpster diver. I'll bring in a lot of watermelon, cantaloupe, whatever seasonal fruit and vegetables there are. I'll lay a bunch of it down also, and I'll chop it up real good. But I just got a garden full of organic matter.
Wow.
And then on top of that, I have laid down just a ton of my inputs, a lot of IMO 3s that I've made. I brewed up a bunch of IMO 2 teas, liquid IMO2s, put down the fermented chicken scratch that I have. I also put down lots of wood chips. I make what's called chunk IMO, and it's the bigger pieces of wood that, you know, are too big for a good IMO. They're big and chunky, but they get inoculated in the IMO3 pile. And at the end, when my IMO3 pile is done, I'll remove these big chunks and put them in a 5-gallon bucket and further inoculate them. And I just let them sit all summer and until it's ready to use. So I threw a bunch of just inoculated chunky wood chips in there. And then I put down some ash from my fire pit, potash. And that has been covered with straw. And I've laid down crop cover also and planted some winter vegetables in there also. It's a lot of stuff, but it's fun. So that's kind of what's called your base fertilizer in Jadam. You're getting all this organic matter into your garden. Mm-hmm. And then throughout the rest of the winter, fall, and spring, I'm going to be doing what's called additional fertilizers. And that's where I'm taking the Jadam liquid fertilizer, the JLF that I make, and I'll make JMS, Jadam Microbial Solution. And I'll continually, throughout all of winter and spring, I will be fertilizing my garden with this liquid fertilizer that I've made. Every week, I'll take a bucket of JLF to my garden, and I let the water hose run in the bucket, and it just overflows all throughout the garden. And that's all I do. That's how I prep my garden, and I keep it ready for next spring.
So in a place like Oklahoma, where you're getting pretty far south, I know that, you know, it varies different climate to climate. Are you growing anything in these gardens throughout the winter? Are there any crops that you can get away with growing in the fall season late? What are you growing right now, if anything?
Yeah, so technically nothing is growing. It's all seed right now. I don't even see any plants or anything like that. Everything is underneath the straw and the grass, but there is seed down, and there are foods that I'm growing. You know, you can grow winter crop, and basically all your winter crops are kind of considered crop cover also. You know, whenever you order a bag of crop cover seed or stuff like that, you'll have edible food in there. You know, you don't eat the clover, but there'll be a daikon radish in there often and stuff like that that you can actually eat. But the winter crops that I have planted, and I don't plant a lot. They're just, it's called snap crops. You're just little bitty corners of your garden that you're trying to keep grass from growing in. It's almost like a crop cover right there to keep weeds back.
Sure.
On the edges of my garden and stuff like that, I'll plant a lot of little things like carrots. You can have winter lettuce. Spinach. You can do onions, asparagus, a lot of peas, garlics. Sometimes I plant cabbage, but they get so big and they take up a lot of room. But like mustard green, kind of the same thing. They get so big and leafy. But turnips, they grow underground. You can grow Brussels sprouts. So there's a ton of stuff. I'm not growing all of that, but I am growing. Jeez. I am growing probably about 5 or 6 things right now.
That is super cool.
That are winter hardy, right? They're winter hardy and they'll last through freeze. They can have snow and ice on them. They'll still go.
That's nuts. I love that idea of some winter crops. Now you talk about the snow and the freeze. You got to worry about that coming in, killing your plants and all of that. What happens to your JLF that's outdoors when it freezes? Does that become an issue?
You know what? That is the number one question I get asked the most. Can my JLF freeze? I promise you, I've answered that question 10 times this week alone. So yeah, it's a great question too, because it's like, okay, what do I do? Like, you know, weather and temperature has an effect on nutrient. You know, mm-hmm. If you've got a bottle of nutrients out in hot, hot sun, it's going to degrade kind of fast. But with JLF, it can freeze. It's totally fine. It will freeze. I've had one have a big old ice cap on it, and you know, they freeze. It's no big deal. The nutrient remains in the JLF when it freezes, right? The microbiology, some of it definitely is going to die because it can't handle those type of temperatures. Some of it's going to make it through. But what you do is when, you know, in the late winter, early spring, when it's not getting below freezing anymore, what you do is you chop up some fresh greens, throw it in your JLF, mix it up, and that's going to start the microbiology up again, and it all just starts over. It's simple. It's that easy. So the bigger problem is you can't get your nutrient out. You know, it's frozen. So you're going to have to get a 5-gallon bucket of it out somehow. So yeah, you got to work with it. What I will probably end up doing just for safety is I'll get probably 10 gallons of JLF in 5-gallon buckets, and they'll be put, you know, in an area, not in my house for sure, but probably in my shed, that it will stay warm enough that it will be liquid that I'll be able to water during those times I can get it. But typically it doesn't freeze so hard that, you know, a big 45-gallon barrel of JLF is going to freeze all the way through. It'll get an ice cap, like I said, on top, and you can bust it. But typically, the barrels that I have, the bigger they are, 45-gallon barrels and a little bigger, that takes a lot of coal to freeze that whole thing up.
Yeah, that is a good point. So you talk about cover crops. What do you recommend? I know one of the big problems is leaving these fields completely fallow, but what are your favorite cover crops and why do you love cover crops? Like, what is your favorite part about what they do?
All right. So I'm learning about crop covers, cover crops, however we want to label these things, vegetables. Some people don't like calling them crop covers. We're just going to call them crop cover or cover crops just for the simplicity of it. But what I'm getting into are the legumes. And it's the science behind it, the why, right? The what, the legume is like a bean, like, I think clover's legume, but peas and lentils, peas definitely are legumes. And they grow throughout the winter. You can harvest them, you know, they're hardy, but it's the why. Why am I now getting into the legumes? Because I have always planted winter rye, a lot of hairy vetch, a lot of different kinds of clovers. I like clover because different types of clovers will have this beautiful flower, and it's a real pretty thing when it starts to flower, right? Swiss chard, I've grown all of those things. I've bought Bokashi Earthworks crop cover and just, you know, throwing it out, very good. But what I now am doing is I'm actually purchasing seeds, actual food seeds, and kind of mixing my own thing together, and it has a lot of legume. And the reason that you want the legume is those plants have developed symbiotic relationship with a nitrogen fixing bacteria, rhizobia.
Rhizobia,
right? What it's doing is when you grow legumes as a crop cover, those roots go down and they're putting out exudates, attracting these nitrogen fixing bacteria, and the bacteria will get into the root and create nodules.
Yep.
And within these little nodules, they are fixing nitrogen and the plant is using that nitrogen as a food source. And so, whenever you're growing those legumes, that's what's going on underneath the soil. You're getting nitrogen fixation going on. And what happens is those bacteria and those rhizobia bacteria, they don't leave those nodules, as I understand it. They're there for life. And so they're constantly working in those nodules as long as they're, you know, as long as there's organic matter for them to live on and do their thing. So that's a benefit of growing legumes. It's what's going on underneath your soil and for your soil is a big deal. Another thing, those nodules contributes to your soil organic matter because it stays in the ground. It's not going to leave. You're not going to pull that out. That's going to sit there and break down eventually into plant available form or food. But you're just increasing your organic matter by growing legumes and you're getting that nitrogen fixation going on with those rhizobia bacteria. So it's the more that I learn about these things, I change, right? Next year, I'm probably going to do something different because I learned something else. Who knows? But that's where I am right now. And that's why I'm participating in legumes.
Yes, it's really, really cool how you can see these nodules even. And that's how you know the plant is doing that nitrogen fixing from the atmospheric nitrogen. You know, our air is primarily comprised of nitrogen. And so when you see these fields in between corn harvests or soy harvests, and they're just dead, they're just barren and open. It's crazy to think about how disruptive that is to the natural cycle when there is no cover crop, there is no nitrogen fixing going on, there's no root system at all, really, for the microbes to survive on and to thrive on and to exchange with. So it's very counterintuitive to farm that way. And I like how you're bringing in heavy legumes for the nitrogen fixing.
Yeah.
Really cool, man.
Yeah, and you're exactly right. You're exactly right with that idea of not wanting your garden barren. Like, you want things growing in it all the time. You know, when plants grow in stressful conditions, they'll put out more exudates to try to attract more bacteria to help them out, or fungi or yeast or whatever the case may be, microbiologically speaking. Mm-hmm. So you want roots in the ground all the time because, you know, the more roots you have, the more exudates you get, the more microbiology that's attracted. And you get this stuff called It's necromass, but it's microbiology necromass. That's what it is. It's dead microbes. It's part of your soil organic matter. And microbes have more nutrient in them than plant matter.
Right.
Right. They have more nutritional value than plant matter. So you're always wanting roots in your ground because roots are attracting microbes and microbes are full of nutrient. So yeah, you always want to be planting something in your garden, even through the winter.
That's really cool.
You know, there's those reasons behind it, those microbiology reasons behind it. It's what's going on in the soil. That's what you're always thinking about. What am I putting in my soil? What's growing in it? What's, you know, and what's the reason why it grows so well in that soil?
Right, right. You have kind of this layering going on with your soil. Do you continue to do this layering over winter? And what does that look like as you apply different layers to your soil?
Yeah, so that's that soil layering method I do. I'll do that through the summer also. So soil layering is imitating nature. Like I'm looking out here in my backyard and I'm seeing leaves falling already, right? They are layering the ground. That's what nature does. It puts layers on top of layers. It doesn't dig and turn and till. It just constantly layers and layers. And the upper layers become protection for the lower layers, right? And that's where the microbiology can grow and work and do its thing. And so soil layering imitates that idea. You're just putting organic matter down. It can be anything. It can be grass and leaves all the way up to juicy fruits and vegetables. Anything that's just an organic vegetation, you want to get it in your garden. The more I learn about soil, the more I'm hearing smart people tell me, get organic matter in your garden. You need organic matter because, you know, when you're growing, you're taking out nutrient, and that nutrient came from organic matter. And you can eventually have organic matter in there that has no nutrition. That's just called dirt, right? It's not soil anymore. So you're constantly having to refill that soil bank because you keep taking out, right? You got to put deposits in because you keep withdrawing out of that soil bank whenever you grow a garden. But the soil layering gets the organic matter back in there. It gets the nutrition back in there. And not only does it get nutrient in your soil, that organic matter now becomes food for microbiology, right? The bacteria, the yeast, fungus, mold, they're all going to start growing on that exposed organic matter. When you get microbiology growing on organic matter, you start to attract shredders. And when, like black soldier flies, right, or red wigglers, millipede, centipede, anything that's going to chew up and grind stuff down, you're going to bring in shredders. And that when the shredders start to crawl up towards that stuff that you've laid down, they're creating aeration in your soil. It's called bioturbation, where, you know, the soil is turned by an animal or some kind of shredder or something small. In these little aeration holes, you get room for water particles to stay. You also get room for bacteria to hide, and they start to form their biofilm, and that biofilm starts to create soil aggregates. And man, it just goes on and on and on. You can talk about it forever. But that's the benefits of soil layering. Whenever you have leftover food, you can either put it straight in your compost, or you can go out and dump it in your garden area. Just dump it in there and cover it up with some leaves if you feel like you need to cover it up. But just get organic matter into your gardening area. And this is the idea of soil layering. You don't need to dig a hole. You just put it on top, and the microbes will come and get it because you want those shredders to move up through the dirt up to that top layer. That's that aeration that goes on in the soil. So yeah, lots of soil layering goes on throughout the winter. Leftover food, throw it out there.
So when you take a look at things like food scraps that you can see visibly break down and sometimes take a little longer, when you first started on this land, was the food breaking down at the same rate that it is now? Like, did it take time to pick up steam and have these microbes be available and abundant to call in, or no?
Yeah, that's a great question. Yes. So in the summertime, when I on my Instagram, I got pictures of, you know, watermelons and cantaloupes all chopped up underneath my cannabis plants. Within 2 weeks, that stuff is gone. I mean, gone. It is down to the rind, and the rind is kind of dried up and hardened, and it makes kind of a hard, crusty layer on the top of my soil, which is what I want. I want my microbiology protected. I want my mycelium protected from UV lights and all that stuff. So whenever I created my gardens last year, my new growing areas, here's what happened. I put a ton of organic matter in my new garden areas. And what happened was there wasn't enough microbiology. I had so much food. There wasn't enough microbiology there that it really started to get a stink to it. And I actually did have to cover it up. But in my growing spots, my no-till spots, so I've been doing for 4 or 5 years now, I'll put that food down. In 2 weeks, it is gone. Totally gone. So yeah, you can, just by a empirical test, you can see that there's more microbiology working in my no-till spots that are older than my new garden areas that I'm creating. And I plan to create some more new garden areas next spring too.
So I'm wondering, you know, how long that usually takes, and probably has a lot to do with how you're also adding compost. I know that you were going very heavy on the composting. but it's kind of that holistic picture of building up the area that you're living in, right? And increasing the microbiological activity and, you know, just enriching your soil.
Oh, yeah. I dump a ton of compost in there. I mean, I dump everything. I'm telling you, I dump bags of old grass. I like to leave grass and leaves in trash bags and just dump IMO, liquid IMO in there, you know, make some IMO 1, IMO 2, put it in a 5-gallon bucket, mix it up and just dump it in there and let them sit. And they'll just hyphy out, right?
Wow.
I'll dump bags of grass, bags of leaves, tons of compost, any straw, you know, hay bales from friends that I can get. Anything, like I said, the more organic matter you can get in there, the more microbiology you're going to start to get. And remember, they're going to eat all that organic matter. And soon, they're not going to have any more food. You constantly have to be adding this stuff up. And you've got to be building your soil up. You know, even the word composting, I'm into composting. So I'm always looking and listening to podcasts and stuff like this. What's his name? Leighton White. Is his last name White?
Leighton Morrison.
Biologist. Morrison, yeah. Yes. He's really fun to listen to. I like listening to him. He's a working man kind of a talk to me. Like, I'm like, oh, yeah, I get what you're saying. Anyway, I like listening to him because he does all kinds of different styles of composting. But
yeah,
the idea with composting now is like the smarter people, if you will, they're not calling it compost anymore. They're referring to the composting process. And they're saying, compost isn't a thing. Compost is a process. And we need to start calling these things other names. And I don't know enough to really talk on these at all yet. This is really where I'm studying. This is like I'm at the edge of my education and I'm taking steps forward in learning. But you get words like guam, palm, moam, som. And guam is ground up organic matter. And that's G-U-O-M.
That's great.
Ground up organic, P-O-M, particular organic matter. And then you have moam, M-O-A-M, mineral associated organic matter. And see, all of these things are coming about because compost, the USDA says that if you're a commercial composter, you have to hit 150 a certain amount of times throughout a certain amount of days before you can call it compost. The problem is you've burned off all the microbiology. Mm-hmm. You've left thermophiles and that's about it. Mm-hmm. And so that compost, while it might have nutritional value, it doesn't have microbiology in it. It's dead, right? So the idea behind these different guam, palm, moam is that when you compost, if you take your compost up to 115 degrees and don't let it go past that, you're not going to burn your seeds out. You know, you're going to have remaining tomato seeds in your compost or whatever, because you have to get to a certain temperature to burn seeds.
Mm-hmm.
But what you're not doing is you're not burning off your microbiology either.
Right.
And so what's being discussed is, you know, what is in the composting process at 115 for 2 months, or, you know, for a summer, it reaches 115 every once in a while. And after 6 months, it's done. Do you call that compost or do you call that associated mineral organic matter?
Right.
You know, what is it? Because it's not the same as compost that went all summer that hit 150 a bunch of times. It's not. It's different.
Absolutely.
And so compost now is really getting scientific, and it's not called compost much anymore. And the change is going to come in books. You know, the reason we say call it compost is because the USDA says that compost is something that is organic matter that reaches 150 certain amount of days, like I said, and then we buy it in a bag and it's called compost.
Right.
And that's the way people think.
It's all
different. The people who study it and get into soil biology, the food web and all that stuff, they're seeing, okay, this compost treated microbiology or microbiology reacted different to this compost rather as opposed to this compost. And so, again, it's all about your growing environment and your area and what works best for you. You know, you're going to realize some type of compost maybe was more beneficial than another type of compost. So that, anyway, back to what you said before. Yes, I had a ton of compost, as we'll call it, but I'm wondering if it's more of a guam, a palm, or a psalm now. You know what I'm saying? I'm wondering how to define it better.
Well, it's an interesting thought, and it goes with the idea of like prolific microorganisms versus a wide diversity of microorganisms. We've talked about extracts versus teas on this show, how when you bubble a compost tea, you're proliferating the strongest microbes within that tea. So then you have a very high amount of a very small variety of microbes in there. Whereas some people are doing an extract where they simply steep the bag and agitate it for 5 minutes or so, never bubble it. And that allows a lower total number of microbes into the solution, but a much higher diversity of microbes. This is a similar way to look at what you just described with the thermophilic microorganisms. Now, thermophilic, thermo meaning heat and philic meaning that they like heat. That's where these particular microbes thrive. And we know that they break things down and that they do all that stuff. But you're losing a whole huge lower portion of the food web when you cater to only the thermophilic microbes. So is that reducing your overall diversity? At the very least, it's certainly distinguishing the difference between those two products, like you said, the temperature being vastly different and therefore the microbial content being vastly different. It's a very interesting way to look at it.
Yes, definitely a difference in microbiology with the different types of compost you get. Most of the compost that people listening, most of the compost you buy will be thermophilic. It's not going to have much microbiology whatsoever. It will have nutrient in it. You can put nutrient into compost to beef it up. But most of that biology is going to be dead. Mushroom compost will be totally dead. You want to make your own compost somewhat. If you're trying to be a grower and get a garden going, you know, you need compost. Just compost in your garden. That's the easiest thing to do. Just make your pile in your garden and let it just do it there. Compost there in your garden. And you're going to have, like Jordan said, you're going to have a much higher, or you're going to have a much more diverse microbial population, which is what you want. Because what will happen is the microbes that like your garden, they'll start to proliferate in your garden. They'll start to populate already because they like it. And they'll be the more beneficial ones in your environment. Those will be your IMOs that will thrive. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So you want a multitude because you want the most options for the ones that'll fit perfectly into your garden to establish and thrive. That's exactly right. I totally agree. We'll be right back with OK Calyx, everyone. But first, shout out to Pulse Grow, the industry leaders in grow room monitoring. Code GROWCAST at PulseGrow.com gets you savings on their Pulse One and their Pulse Pro, the best grow room monitors on the market, hands down. There's nothing quite like these products, people. I was just down at the Pulse HQ watching these things be made, be assembled, and watching the crew work on the code and work on all the aspects of the new monitoring systems that are about to drop. But for now, you can get the Pulse Pro, which is going to integrate directly in with their new products. And this thing helps give you a total readout on your grow. You've got data monitoring, you've got alerts, you've got all the stuff you need, plus so much more, giving you spectrometer readings, giving you light intensity readings, relative humidity, of course, temperature, VPD, dew point, a PPFD reading, CO2. If you want the best, pulsegrow.com has it. Code GROWCAST will save you some bucks. And this is the best stuff that money can buy, folks. It's USA made. It uses Swiss made and Austrian made sensors. It's backed by a 1-year warranty. And they have a US based support team. I was just there. You know, they're a tight knit team. They were telling me that when people suggest a feature that they're thinking about adding, they can get that thing up in the app the next week. That's how fast these guys move. That's how much they care about dialing in your grow space to an obsessive degree. PulseGrow.com, use code GROWCAST, grab a Pulse One or a Pulse Pro, and don't forget, send me a screenshot when you buy a Pulse, because you're entered to win a GROWCAST Wish. We're doing a giveaway. GROWCAST Wish is our biggest prize. If you already bought one with code GROWCAST, send me that receipt. Send me a screenshot. contact@growcastpodcast.com is the email, or Instagram or Discord. Send me your Pulse screenshot. Be entered to win a GROWCAST Wish, which is anything within reason that you wish for. PulseGrow.com, code GROWCAST, everybody. Oh, and real quick, our other partner, Foop, their 20% off sale ends tomorrow at midnight. Tuesday, October 18th at midnight, 20% off is over at thefoop.com and amazon.com/Foop. So head on over if you were looking to grab that code GROWCAST stacks. Thank you to our two biggest supporters. All right, let's get back to the show, everyone. Let's talk about getting started. I know that it's winter time, so probably a lot of people aren't going to be getting started now. But when it comes to composting, also go back and listen to the older episode with OK Calyx. But what do you recommend? I mean, obviously a static pile is so easy. You said keeping it in your garden. I know a worm bin inside can be a good option, but when people are just starting getting composting, do you have a suggestion?
Yeah. So there's the idea of just a 5-gallon bucket in your kitchen. covering it with bokashi. That will be gross, but you keep the lid covered and just continue to put food scraps in it until it's full. And if you have bokashi, it's a very beneficial thing for this type of small composting process. But bokashi is basically a dry substrate like rice hulls or wheat bran. I've used sawdust, newspapers, but it has lots of EM1, bacillus bacteria. Mm-hmm. And those guys are powerful. They'll eat fast. They'll chow down quick. That's why people use a lot of bokashi. I make my own and I use a lot of it. But a 5-gallon bucket just of food scraps breaking down will be highly beneficial to even you growing in some pots, right? Yeah. Even if you're not making much at all. Yeah, small bokashi bin. But here's my advice. If you want to make a good compost pile, I'm talking about the people that need about a cubic yard, because that's what's really required to keep heat inside of it, to that which helps microbiology work and do its thing.
Right.
You need about a cubic yard. That's a good pile. It's not huge at all by any means. It's doable for sure. But about a cubic yard is what you're going to need. If you stand by it, it needs to come up to you about your hips. You know what I'm saying? That'll give you an idea, maybe.
Right. I've heard 3 feet cubed. You need it large enough to be able to reach the temperatures within the center.
That's right. The center's got to keep a little heat because that's where the microbiology is going to thrive and do its thing. And when you give it a little turn, you're putting the outside into the inside. So it cooks a little bit also. But the best thing to do is right now, what I'm always eyeballing is my neighbors. When are they raking their yard? When are they mowing their grass and bagging their leaves? Because right now, everybody's going to get one more good mow in. They're going to get all their leaves bagged up. And guys, there's plenty of bags of leaves out there that are bagged up free for you in your neighbor's yard. And yes, I'm going to get all kinds of replies like, well, what about people that spray their yard? And don't you worry about chemicals. How do you call yourself organic when you do these things? Dude, know your neighbor. Ask them. It's real freaking easy. I know my neighbors. My neighbors grow my strains. That's how I know them. And so whenever they bag up their leaves, they'll bag them up and I'll go get them immediately. I know they don't spray. And listen, guys, most people don't spray. People like me, I don't spray my yard. I have 5 kids. I got bills. I'm not wasting money. I grow weed. I'm not wasting my money on chemicals to spray in my backyard. So everything in my yard is good to go. I can grow with everything. There's no chemicals in it. But anyway, know your neighbor. That's all I can say. Get those bags of leaves.
Sure.
Get that grass. That is the best thing for your compost to get started. That gives you volume and mass, which is what you need for a composting process is to take off. So leaf and grass, rake it up in a big pile. And then in that pile, you start burying all those food scraps. Get the food scraps down in the middle. It'll heat that pile up quick. Food scraps have lots of nitrogen in it. And so that nitrogen is going to feed those microbes. They're going to chow down. They're going to reproduce. When they do that, they create a little energy burst. And that's what that heat is. But it's simple. It's very simple. And what it's going to take is it's going to take you 8 months over the winter for this stuff to break down into humic looking stuff, right? Well, it might be some grass in there still, but it's going to be a dark look to it. And it takes about 8 months. So if let's say I started my winter compost in August, right? That's when I always do it. I go August, September, October, November, December, January, February, March. That's 8 months of composting, and I will have compost ready. It will be done. It's slower. It takes longer, but it still works. You can still compost in the wintertime. And then in the summertime, I start my bins in March, right? It takes 6 months. It goes March, April, May, June, July, August. August, I've got a ton of compost. I'm ready to dump in my gardens because my gardens are about over in August. So it's just a perfect cycle to work compost. Start in August, start in March.
I love it, man. That's fucking killer. And people keeping this stuff going over the winter, there's, like I said, there's so much lost time there. So I do really appreciate this advice. But here we are speaking in the present. We're actually, you know, around harvest time, people taking down their harvest or pushing it, and will be soon as we're recording this conversation.
Yeah,
man. I want to know what you think about harvest time. So you talk about, you know, cannabis being so prolific in your garden. There's a lot that people take into consideration here. They scope the trichomes and they, you know, check the bud swelling and they do all this stuff. What does your harvest process look like? What do you wait for? Are there any signs that are like a must, or is it more like weather based? Talk to me about how you determine when to harvest and how to harvest.
Yeah. So outside is always different. Everybody's outside yard is going to be different. And on Instagram, there's a lot of growers, there's a few growers that I still don't understand yet that if you move a plant that is outside, if you move it 10 feet to the right or left and it gets shade sooner than the other spot, you can trigger it into flower a week or two early. It's simple. My backyard has lots of trees. I get lots of shade starting at about 5 o'clock. And so what will happen is as the fall starts to come along and that sun doesn't get so high in the sky, I get less photons on my plants, right? And so when I get less photons, those babies are going to trigger into flower. And so my plants always go into flower almost 2 weeks earlier than most people's.
Huh.
My plants are always done sooner than most people's. Like just a week and a half ago, I harvested all my blueberry. Blueberry usually gets done soon anyway, but they harvested out early. Now I've got one more plant. I got killer breath and it's still going. And the reason it's still going, kind of going to the question you asked, is because the trichomes are not done. When I'm looking at my trichomes, I'm looking, you know, the round part, you got to have a jeweler's eye or magnification, something to look at the trichome. But when you look at it, it's a round circle on a nice little stem, and that round circle wants to be milky white. If it's clear and shiny and, you know, see-through, it's not ready. There's no THC, the THCA in there whatsoever. That cloudiness is the indicator that your plants are getting done. It's not the indicator that they are done because every strain is different. You know, if you ever listen to Frenchy Cannoli, he talks about ripeness. You know, there's a point at each and on each branch of the plant, ripeness can happen sooner than other parts of the branch also. And that can happen. So I'm constantly, you scan your plant, right? You just make a circle. I always make this kind of a circle on my lower branches. And then I'll make a little circle on branches as high as I can reach. You know, if I usually don't get a ladder, but I just kind of reach up high and pull a branch down and look at it. And I'll make a circle because I'm trying to get an overall estimate of what's going on. So if I cut the whole plant down, I'm trying to get the majority of my trichomes to be done, right? You know, after cloudy becomes amber, they call it. And that's when the THCA is, what I understand, starting to break down into a CBD product. I really don't know anything about that.
So yeah, some of that can be an indicator of THC converting into CBN, which is a sleepy time cannabinoid. And not every cultivar is capable of doing that, but when it can, it happens later in the flowering cycle and when it starts to turn that amber. Do you wait for amber? Is that a big part of your waiting period?
No, I try not to. I actually try to hit it before ambers. Now, ambers are definitely the indicator of, okay, man, we're ready. Within the week, we ought to be good. I mean, typically, that's how I kind of see it.
Yeah, that's usually what I do. Usually when I see amber, I'm chopping at that point. And really, if I let some go, sometimes it's so special. Like that's usually what I tell people to toy around with is let it go a little longer and see if you like it better that way. But yeah, you have to wait for those milky trichomes. And then when I start to see amber, like with regularity, then I mean, I'm there. Something I've noticed, and maybe this is way off base, I've brought it up on the show before, but I feel like when you agitate a branch, it can sometimes make a trichome darken. It makes the hairs darken, for instance. And so like if you've been touching the same top bud over and over and then you're looking at that top bud, I think that that's not a very good indicator.
Yeah.
Because you've been looking at it and may have been mashing those trichomes. And I swear I've observed that they look a little further along sometimes. So yeah, it's interesting. You're about right along the same time frame as I do as far as scoping the trichomes. But then you get to know the strains, right? Like there's a certain point where you have a pretty good idea just by looking at the thing.
Oh yeah. You know, like I've grown my strains for 3 years now. I've grown this killer breath for 2 years straight now. So yeah, if you grow the same strain, you get very familiar.
You get to know
them. Yeah, you totally do. You're like, oh yeah, this baby's about done. I can already tell she's starting to do what she does. You know, they'll start to fatten up sometimes in that last week and they'll do put on a nice color or you know, they really get white looking. You don't even have to have a magnifying glass. You can just see that white look
right
all over the buds. That's an indicator for me too. And I'm like, okay, I don't even need my trichome lens. I can see it from here.
Totally. That's a good point.
Another thing that I like to do since I breed a lot of plants, don't cut the whole plant down. Like my plants are still up. I've still got Bluetooth. I've still got a couple of nugs on Bluetooth going because I want to see what it looks like in, you know, week 8 or 9 or 10 or whatever. And I'm just letting it go just to see what it looks like, right? Just to see You know, I always think when you let an 8 week finishing plant, when you let it go into right at the beginning of week nine, I think it looks even better. I think it swells up more.
Right.
The bag appeal is better. The trichome degradation or the THC degradation might be taking place. You know what I'm saying? But you still get high off of it. You know, I wouldn't have been able to tell you if I picked it 2 days earlier. You know, if you gave me a blind taste test, I wouldn't know what day you picked it on. It's still going to get you high. But if you cut all your plant down, leave a bud. Just leave a bud on there. It doesn't need to be a big one. Just a nice little thumb-sized bud. And you'll kind of see what the plant looks like past its prime. Because sometimes they look pretty. They change still. They grow to the very end.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. You push that extra little time and see how you like it. You know, I've even done a partial harvest before, and I don't see that much of a massive difference with the partial harvest, but I could see that it could maybe be different depending on the strain too. You just definitely don't want to cut too early. I feel like that's the biggest sacrifice you can make. Yeah, don't cut too early for sure. And then, like you said, push it a little longer.
I had a golden goat. One of the first plants I grew was a golden goat, and it was a beast of a plant. And I was so proud of it. This is like back in 2018. It's when it was legal, but it's one of my first legal seed grown plants. And it was so big and pretty. And I thought, okay, week eight, it's over. I chopped it down. We washed part of it. We dried part of it. And me and a friend smoked on it all day long and never got high a lick. And I learned later that golden goat needed to go at least into week 10 probably. And that's when I didn't know. I thought all marijuana went 8 weeks and it's over, you know?
Oh, man, I just did that with a Molokai citrus kush. I cut it down too early. It's such a beautiful plant. And it reeked to high heaven. The buds were fat, but it just needed to go, you know, 12 plus weeks or whatever it needed. And I chopped it down at like week 10 or whatever it was, 10 and a half. And it just didn't get you high, you know. And it's such a great strain because I had some of that same strain and it was like wonderful, wonderful. And like I said, it even tasted wonderful, smelled wonderful. But for me, and, you know, maybe for a lighter smoker, it would have been perfect. But for me, I have a tolerance. I need something that really busts through that tolerance. So I'm running it again. I'm running it proper. But I experienced the same thing as your golden goat, man. That's really funny. I think a lot of growers can relate to that.
Do you run a lot of long strain?
I don't. I do not. I run a lot of polyhybrids, a lot of 8-9 weekers. And for a 16 weeker, you know, there are some people in my community who run 16 week strains. Man, I can get 2 flowering cycles in that time. It's got to be very, very, it's got to be right up my alley for me to consider anything above 10 weeks. But I'm just impatient. I really respect the people who go who go to dive into those deeper parts of the gene pool, because if you don't, if you're like me, you're just missing out on a lot of that stuff. But, you know, different strokes for different folks. I want to talk about your Bluetooth in just a second, but let's wrap up harvest here. What are your harvesting methods like? You said you do the whole plant. Do you hang the whole plant or do you chop it up?
Well, it depends on what I want to, the end product, right? It's what I want to do with it. What I did with all the blueberry, I had had Blue Ribbon, which is a blueberry squealer F2 strain. I had a Blue Tooth, which is a blueberry squealer crossed to blueberry Mac Muffin. That Blue Tooth was a beast. It's a commercial grower, you know? So I've got a lot of commercial growers that have asked me, when you get a stabilized line, right? They don't want all seeded, messed up hermy crap. When you're going to give commercial growers seeds, they're going to need to be good, okay? So I'm growing this Bluetooth out like I grew the blueberry squealers and the blueberry breaths out, and they're in dispensaries now. But this Bluetooth is a beast. These nuggets are as big as my fist, and they were stinky, stinky, sweet blueberry. And so I'm doing a pheno hunt at Legends Cannabis Company right now of Bluetooth and Blueberry War Child. And these both have a blueberry Mac Muffin crossed into them, because all these blueberry Mac Muffin crosses that I did off of my other blueberry stuff, when I grew them out, the buds are enormous. They're very pretty. The bag of peel is there. They're super frosty, but they're very dense. They're heavy, right? That's what, for commercial growing, you're going to want some weight. That's what's going to be good for a commercial grower. These nuggets are massive. But I cut almost everything down. Like I said, I left a few buds on these things just to see what they look like. And I mean, they're not big buds, guys. I've just left little, about thumb-sized buds just to see what they look like. But the rest of it, yes, I cut it. And I cut it at about 3 o'clock in the morning. No reason. I just don't sleep, y'all, at all. But I cut it down at 3 o'clock in the morning. It was super dark and nice and cold. And I had 2 ice chests full of dry ice. And I had a towel over the dry ice, and man, when I chopped the bud branch off and I went to clean them, they went straight into that cooler, into that cold air. And I took those to a friend, And it's in Oklahoma City right now getting washed. And so I'll have reports on it. You know, I'll have everything reported on it.
Hell yeah, brother.
Just like a commercial grow would. I'll have all the reports on it.
Hell yeah, man. I love it. That Bluetooth sounds absolutely amazing. And we need a full report on that extract. I know who you're working with,
yes.
Another good friend of the show. So
yes.
Good stuff, my man. What else can you tell us about the Bluetooth? Anything, you know, traits of the parents, what you were looking to accomplish, different attributes that you love about it?
Yep. So Bluetooth, the lineage behind it, Mama was Blueberry Squealer. And Blueberry Squealer is Blueberry Muffin from Humboldt County crossed to Blueberry Train Mac from at Russ Brandon, Brandon Russ stuff. So that's Blueberry Squealer. And then on the other side is Blueberry Mac Muffin. And that comes from SFV Genetics. And I believe it is a DJ Short Blueberry crossed to Mac, or sorry, a DJ Short Blueberry crossed into a Blueberry Muffin. Is that right? I can't remember. God, man, I don't have that written down. I've got a lot of stuff. I'll have to look at that again. I'm sorry.
That's right.
But lots of blueberry, lots of good strains, lots of good growers behind it. It's definitely stinky, man. I mean, it's really pretty. I'm telling you, the nuggets were super dense, and they were stacked in probably 8 inches to 10 inches down, just running up, you know, those branches covered in buds. Very frosty, the great sugary sweet smell. That's what I'm going for, right, with this whole blueberry thing is the terp. I don't care if it's around, you know, 18%, 17% THC. I'm going for that. That's going to get me high. I'm good with that. But I want that taste. I want the sweet, fruity sweetness, the blueberry sweetness to come across because I like it. And that's what this whole series is about. Soon or one day I'll be on another series for some other reason. But right now it's this.
It's the blueberry terps. Now, is it blueberry specifically that you're getting out of the Bluetooth? Or like you said, is it more complex, fruity, sweet? A little more to it.
Correct. There's going to be more to this. But it's not on the gas side. It's still on the fruit side. There's a blueberry smell that it's just blueberry when you smell it. It's got a deep fruity smell to it. This also has the sugary sweet light smell to it, which is what the Squealer has. Squealer was a light, sweet blueberry. My other blueberry breath, my other strain is a sweet cushy blueberry, a sweet cush with a little bit of blueberry in it. But the blueberry squealers are all sugary sweet. And this Bluetooth has a blueberry squealer in it. And it definitely brought that sweetness across. But the blueberry Mac Muffin beefed it up because my blueberry squealer F2 I had out in my yard, my blue ribbon, it's small nuggets. Very sweet smelling, just straight blueberries. And I'm talking that nice blueberry terp. I'm not saying it's the old 70s blueberry that everybody talks about. I can't reproduce all that. I can just do what I can do with what I have right now. But the terps on these squealers are fantastic, and that came across in that Bluetooth. And I'm trying to get something for some commercial growers to grow, something really good bred here in Oklahoma, a good Oklahoma blueberry thing going on. That's what I'm kind of going for right now.
I love it, man. We got to meet up and do a little swap. We'll get you some of the peach going if you like the fruity and sweet. We'll do some peach for blueberry swap, and that sounds great, man. Sounds like a good time.
I saw y'all doing this might be over with once it's played, but you got Oklahoma City going on, Oklahoma City bean swap going on with Jinx.
Yeah, buddy, please, if you can make it to any of these, dude, I would love to see you there.
Dude, I want to make it. I was already looking at that. It's a possibility.
October 30th, everyone. It's at Cannabis Dispensary on 29th Street. It's a cannabis picnic. It's the Growcast meetup, and we've partnered with Jinx. We would love to see you there, okay, Calix. That would be fucking epic. A lot of people are coming.
I want to. I saw you going to have food
Brandon
there.
Rust is going to be there, I think.
I saw. That's what I thought. I think that's what I was understanding. Yeah, going to be food there, burgers, while it lasts, trading smoking weed probably.
I had to say while it lasts because sometimes these get pretty big. So come on down, guys.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And you're dealing with stoners too. Going to be eating.
That's right, man. Come on down, everybody. There's going to be a lot of fun, and bring some beans to swap. I'll have clones for sale. I'll have beans for swap.
Awesome.
I'll be giving away beans too. Like it'll be
awesome.
It'll be an extravaganza. Hit me up, everybody. Excited to see you October 30th. Oh, and then just really quickly, you said it, man. So this launched into it. We're also doing a Denver meetup that same day. And we're also doing a Southern Illinois meetup on October 29th. These are all member meetups for the community, but any grower is welcome. So go to growcastpodcast.com/meetup and you'll see all of our meetups. I'll have that updated by the time this drops. So anyways, man, I hope to see the great OK Calyx at the Cannabis Picnic.
I want to.
I love the community stuff, man. I fucking love it. This is what it's all about.
I do too, man. I try to meet people all the time around Tulsa.
That's what's up, man. You got to connect with the growers around you. That I think is the most important thing. We don't need to be pulled into the freaking metaverse to where we never see each other. So let's get together. Let's swap some seeds. I'll make sure to bring some of that peach. I'll bring some peach crosses of some kind. So we'll see you there, everybody.
I'm definitely going to try to work. I'm going to try to be there. Yes. I just saw that today. I just saw it today online.
Yeah, man. Trying to get the message out there. Cool. So what else do we have, man? Before we wrap it up here, anything else that you'd like to discuss? Anything we missed?
Do the IMO. What else can you do in the wintertime? Get IMOs going. Collect IMO 1. I was going to say, but you know, most people take their IMO, their rice out into the field to collect IMO, which is totally fine. But what you can also do is you can go out in the field with a 5-gallon bucket, get up underneath an old dead tree, scrape up some of that old dead bark, get you some woody chunks, you know, that have some white mycelium look to it, but put it in a 5-gallon bucket, bring it back home. I put it in my shed and I just put a paper towel down or a brown sack down on in my 5-gallon bucket on top of all that wood, and I'll put my rice on top of it. And within 2 or 3 days in my shed, I'll have a nice little collection of IMO1. Put the wood chips in the 5-gallon bucket, and then I'll put just a paper bag down and I'll put the rice on top of the paper bag in the 5-gallon bucket.
Nice.
And it just collects IMO immediately, right? And you make IMO2 with that. And it's real easy. However much that ball of rice weighs, get that much sugar, mix it together real good to where it's all soupy, and that's called IMO2. And that's what I use. I'll take a big spoonful of that IMO2, put it in a 5-gallon bucket, stir it, and pour it in my garden, pour it in my compost, pour it in my pot. You know, you can do that in the winter also. You don't have to go out, you know, because you're not going to collect much IMO in 30-degree weather or anything. 40 and below, it's going to be difficult to collect stuff. You're going to need to get your temperatures up to really collect a good IMO. So I take it in my shed. I'll put the 5-gallon bucket full of that old wood chips on top of a heating mat. Put my rice inside the 5-gallon bucket, cover it with whatever, let it sit there for 2 or 3 days, and now you got your IMO1. And again, IMOs, indigenous microorganisms, is what this whole thing is about. You are always trying to get more IMO into your soil, into your compost. You're constantly trying to get microbiology in large numbers. And like, you know, if you collect IMO from around your yard, like if I just go and sweep up a bunch of leaves and old dead grass and put it in a 5-gallon bucket, I'll get IMO off of that. But that'll be indigenous microorganisms from my backyard. It'll be microbes that my plants already use. And what I'm doing is capturing a bunch of them, putting some sugar on them so they kind of go dormant. But then I'll put all of that into some liquid and I'll dump it in my garden. And what I've done is I've concentrated more IMO into one growing area, right? I've concentrated IMO. So I've got a lot more IMO in my growing areas than I do it probably in my surrounding yard area, just because I've got lots of organic matter and I constantly am dumping IMO2Ts in there. But it's a good thing to do, collect IMO1. You don't even have to make it IMO2. You can just collect IMO1 and then you can just crumble the rice in your garden area. All you've done is added a little bomb full of microbiology into your garden area. So yeah, IMO1. That is the workhorse of organic matter, indigenous microorganism, the workhorse of organics, right?
So let me ask you this. This is a process that you've done over winter and in the summer.
Yeah.
You've personally done this.
Yes, I've personally done it.
Have you noticed a difference? Have you noticed a difference at all in the robustness or the collection process itself, or is it virtually the same?
It's virtually the same. As long as the conditions are right, the material, you know, it does what it does,
wow.
Right? Mother Nature, if the conditions are right, Mother Nature does what she does. So just mimic conditions is all you're trying to do. You know, 80 degrees, that's perfect. You're going to get all kinds of good IMO from a good 80 degree bucket. And if you put a 5-gallon bucket on a heating mat, it's going to get hot in that bucket. Cover it with a lid, it's going to start sweating in there.
I love that idea, right? Though, of bringing back the wood chips instead of bringing your box out. That I think that would probably make, it's like lowers the barrier to entry for a lot of people, I feel.
Yes, it's way easier to do that. You know, another way I've done it in the wintertime is I stuff pantyhose full of rice and I'll dig it and put it down in the ground about a foot. and I do this by at a bamboo grow that's by my house. I'll dig down deep by the roots of bamboo, and I'll stick these pantyhose logs full of rice down in the ground, and I'll cover them with dirt. I'll come back in a week, and you pull it out, and you won't have white fluffy clouds. That's not what this one's about. This is anaerobic microbes, right? This is down in the ground. These aren't getting any oxygen. But JDAM is all about anaerobic microbes. But you will get microbiology because the temperature of the earth, even just a foot down, is not as cold as the air above. So you're going to get microbiology working a foot down in the ground. And I'll pull those pantyhose out, and it will be creamy. And it smells just like a bag of mushrooms. Now, every time, it's got tons of colors in it, right? All kinds of yeasts and bacterias. And it just becomes a creamy, gooey substance. And it's perfect to mix with rice already, right? It's just a perfect little mixture you can do. But yeah, that's another way I do it in the wintertime. Nice. But again, that's anaerobic microbes. That's not aerobic. Right. On top of the ground, we're going to get a lot of aerobic microbes.
Right. Man, this is fucking great. You're always really good on the show. We're up to the top of the hour already, man. I know you got a limited time here.
Man, that was about fast.
I know. I was going to say we could go a lot longer, but this was a great overview of overwintering. I think that a lot of growers are, you know, we're now approaching this time of year and people are formulating their plan, and go as hard as you can with it, guys. Get those vegetables growing over winter. Use those food crops as cover crops, and don't slack on the microbial collection too. Just because it's winter doesn't mean you have to stop as a gardener and as a organic farmer. So really, really cool stuff. Okay, Calix, where can people find you? Of course, we didn't say where people can find you. I'll put it in the description.
No worries. Okay, find me on Instagram at OKCalix. That's where I do all my organic stuff. And at OKCalix Genetics, that's where I post a lot of flowers and plant pictures of my genetics. I've got YouTube. It's just OKCalix on YouTube. I post every once in a while on there. And you can email me, okcalix@gmail.com. It's real easy. okcalix@gmail.com. I'll send you an input list. I make all kinds of inputs and my strain lists.
Nice, man.
Check them out.
That's perfect. Okcalix on Instagram, and also follow the page Okcalix Genetics on Instagram. Follow both, everybody. Thank you, buddy. We will let you go here, and listener will let you go as well. At Growcast on Instagram. See what we're doing. Growcastpodcast.com/action. And we'll see you on the next Growcast. This is OK Calix and Jordan River signing off, saying be safe and grow smarter. Bye-bye, everyone. That's our show. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you to OK Calix. I know you guys love OK Calix. He will be back on the show soon, and we're going to get him on Growcast TV for the members over at growcastpodcast.com/membership. Oh, before we wrap it up, AC Infinity, baby! The best grow gear in the game. Code GROWCAST15 saves you 15% at acinfinity.com. They've got the thick, sturdy tents with the thick canvas and the thick tent poles. The best tents in the game. They've got the fans that you need, the inline fans, the Cloud Ray oscillating fans now. Again, code GROWCAST15 for 15% off. The best quality grow gear you can find. They've also got lights and scissors and pots and hangers and so much more. But when it comes to the fans and the tents, there's no one else out there that does it better. The inline fans, the Cloud Line series, are fantastic. The S series is the simple series, still comes with a 10-speed fan controller. And the T series comes with a controller that lets you automatically dial in your temperature and humidity. acinfinity.com, code GROWCAST15 for 15% off. They even have grow kits that come with everything you need to expand. Get that second veg tent, get that second flower tent you've been thinking about. Save with the kit and use code GROWCAST15, which now works on those kits. Saving you extra money with the best gear in the game, acinfinity.com. They've been our partners for years. We brought these guys along a long time ago. They've really, really expanded and done a great job. acinfinity.com, code GROWCAST15. Okay, that does it, everyone. That's all for today. Thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you're doing amazing things in your garden. Come on out to the meetups that we have going down. We've got meetups on October 29th. That's up in Harrisburg, Illinois at the Hideaway. Going to be a great time up there. And then on October 30th, we have meetups in Denver and Oklahoma City. Come on down to Denver at the Coffee Joint, 6 to 9 p.m. October 30th. And come on down to Cannabis Dispensary in Oklahoma City. I'll be there at the Oklahoma City meetup. The Denver one's going to be off the chain, though. We got Heart and Soil up there. I think Weed Should Taste Good is going to make it out. It's a seed swap. It's a smoke out. Taken Tops Cannabis is leading that. Thank you so much, Taken Tops. Farmer John will be up there. That Denver meetup is going to be sick. And then Oklahoma City, as I said, I'll be there. It's a cannabis picnic. Jinx Proof is going to be there. Mary Jack is going to be there. Brandon Rust is going to be there. Bunch of people are coming out, and that starts at 4 p.m., 4 to 8 p.m. in Oklahoma City at Cannabis Dispensary on 29th Street, Cannabis 29th. See you October 30th, everybody. And I'm trying to make it up to a Harrisburg meetup as well. Don't sleep on that Southern Illinois meetup on the 29th. I have got to go. So much going on. Stay tuned. Love you all. Bye-bye for now.
These nuggets are massive.